Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Hi, welcome back. Let's continue our discussion of some of the mistakes I've seen people make over the years, and we're kind of counting down some of the ones that are maybe more deadly or dangerous for your financial situation. People mean very well when they offer to help you, but the next one is really a mistake that can get you in trouble, and it's looking for advice in all the wrong places. I don't know, that's a country song maybe, but anyway, looking for advice in all the wrong places. Abigail, when Abigail's husband died, she was consoled by friends and family. Her adult sons flew in to help out with the funeral arrangements and help her kind of sort things out. After taking care of the personal matters, they turned their attention to her finances. And they reviewed what she had, what to do with their father's investments, retirement accounts. Also, there was some life insurance money. So what to do with these things and how to also make up for lost Social Security, how to plan Abigail's financial future. So with the best of intentions and after consulting each other, the two sons advised their mother to do the following. Number one, liquidate the husband's IRA. It was $100,000, so liquidate that IRA and use that to pay off the $100,000 mortgage. Number two, take that life insurance policy and take advantage of the option available from the insurance company to draw a lifetime of income to help make up for what she had lost in reduced income otherwise. And before leaving town, the sons helped Abigail do the paperwork, get it all squared away, and send it in. Well, Abigail wisely decided just to double check. And so she asked her certified financial planner, practitioner, to review the plans that the sons had put in place. And again, it's in motion. But she said, you know, while I'm waiting on this to get done, let me just run it by my certified financial planner. Well, the certified financial planner pointed out to Abigail that number one, liquidating the IRA all at once was going to create this $100,000 IRA was going to be treated as ordinary income. That means it gets stacked on top of all of your other income in that tax year. And that resulted for Abigail having an extra $20,000 in taxes. Number two, while the life insurance being used to provide income, not a bad idea on the surface, she obviously needed the income. But number two, it left her without any real cash on hand, not only for emergencies, but guess what? To pay the tax bill. So very quickly, Abigail realized the calamity that was about to befall her. And so she asked the certified financial planner to put a halt to the well-intended but faulty plan that the sons had created. As you might expect or already suspect, I was a financial planner that Abigail talked to, so I'm very familiar with what was going on. What we talked about instead was, here's another way of doing this to get you to the same place, but maybe have some better tax consequences and put yourself in a better position. So number one, we took the life insurance money, which is tax-free, and used that money to pay off the mortgage. The mortgage was 100. We'll take 100 of the life insurance proceeds, pay off the mortgage, done. No tax bill on that. And there's $50,000 left over that can be held for emergencies or things that come up. Number two, we've got the IRA that the husband had. Instead of liquidating it, we can roll it over from the husband to the wife. That's a spousal rollover. And when you do that, guess what? No tax. Doesn't mean it's tax-free. Ultimately, there still will be a tax when Abigail pulls money out of the IRA, but just simply rolling it over, no taxation. So now we have no big $20,000 tax bill. We have a $50,000 emergency fund, a mortgage that's paid off, and we have an IRA now that we recommended to Abigail that she set that up in something that made sense for her. So after looking at what her situation would be without her husband's income and based on what her needs would be specific to her plans and her situation and her survivorship and what she needed to do and what her obligations would be, Then we constructed a plan and what to do with that $100,000 IRA. And ultimately, we decided to use part of the money to have some longer-term growth for her because there's a need to address inflation long-term, but also use some of it with a fixed annuity to give her income. So she had a fixed annuity for part of the IRA, and the other part was no-load mutual funds. So when you put all that together, what you have is cash in the bank, you have growth potential with the investments, you have annuity for income, and no big tax bill. That makes a lot of sense to me. Now, there's more than one way to build a financial plan, but if you don't have a financial plan, a recent radio guest of mine said, you don't have a financial planner. So if you are trying to figure this out and you're in a survivorship scenario, man or woman, regardless of your situation, if you're trying to figure this out and you've experienced the loss of a loved one and there are funds that you will receive or that you need to figure out, friends, family, wonderful support, look to them for helping you with other things, maybe being there to bounce ideas off of. But they, even though they are there and they're close to you, they may not be best positioned and knowledgeable enough, may not know what they don't know. The sons, in Abigail's case, were well-intending. They just didn't know. So lean on your family and your friends. And if you want them involved, take them to a meeting with a professional advisor. I had a client not long ago hand deliver her friend who had just lost her husband to come in and meet with me. She said, David, you've helped my friend. Can you help me? And the friend had brought her. So, you know, protect your friends. And if you're the person who's lost a loved one, let your friends protect you. Let them hear what the advisor says. Let them be a second opinion about what they perceive from the advisor, what they think about the advisor's recommendations, what their gut reaction is to the advisor. Have them help you pick an advisor if neither one of you know of any. Help, it can be a wonderful thing, but it's got to be the right kind of help. Sometimes we put way too much stock in the experiences of others. You know, in my industry, there are rules on the security side against testimonials. You know, I cannot have a client stand up during a presentation I make and say, David's the best thing on the planet, and he's always given me these wonderful results. Not allowed to do that. And there's a good reason for it. It is and can be misleading. You know, there's a reason they say, there's at the bottom of all these financial things that you will see or hear about, prior performance is not necessarily indicative of future results. Actual results can and will vary. You may incur a profit or loss. Somebody else's experience may not be yours. So be careful about relying on what people say has been their personal experience as it relates to performance. But you certainly want to lean on their experience with an advisor. Are they responsive? Are they willing to personalize, customize, and treat you as an individual and give you what you need, not what they're told or recommend by somebody else that they work for or that provides a financial incentive for them to make a specific recommendation. Lean on your friends, get advice from a professional. And if you do those things, you'll plan stronger.
Hi, I'm Teresa Rand with the Volusia Flagler YMCA. Our Y has 6 locations to help you reach your health and fitness goals. With a focus on healthy living, youth development, and social responsibility, there are many different options to get your family involved, such as sports, swim, exercise, and much more. For more information on how your Y can help with your health and fitness goals, check out www.vfymca.org.
Welcome back. We continue our series on the mistakes I've seen people make over the years, and we next turn our attention to poor tax planning. Taxes are a funny thing. I've never met a person yet who's come into my office and said, David, I want you to help me figure out how to pay more in taxes. I just don't think I'm paying my fair share. Okay? Never happens. Now, they might want you to pay more, but they don't want to pay more. So because of that, everybody wants to legally minimize their tax obligation. Regardless of how patriotic you are or not, you are not required to pay any more than is specified in the tax code. Whatever it is, you are not required to show your patriotism or that you are somehow a better citizen to pay more than what the tax code says. So it's not rigging the system. It's not playing games. It's not, you know, hurting somebody else that you pay what the tax code says. Now, with all that said, there is nothing wrong with making the best use of the options that are available to you and also avoiding some mistakes that people make that can cause you extra taxes and really impair or at least, you know, put a dent in your financial plan. So one of the things that you always want to do is consider taxes as you make your investments, you make decisions, you do your plans for retirement or your investing. I often tell people that I don't allow taxes to drive the car, but they should be in the car. They don't get to drive and they don't get to be a backseat driver, but they need to be in the car. In other words, they need to be considered with your investment and retirement and estate strategies. So if you're working with a financial person that says, oh, I can't talk to you about taxes, or you need to consult your tax preparer, do so. In other words, if they say they can't tell you or advise you about the tax consequences about whatever it is they're recommending, especially if a significant part of the advantage of the particular recommendation is the tax consequence, then you're really only getting a half or one third of a recommendation. You're not really getting a full piece of advice that you can rely on. You're going to need to consult with more than one professional, maybe a team to help you. Now, with those things said, there are some things I've seen over the years that I'm going to put in the not so smart category of tax moves. Don't be offended if this applies to you. There are some things I think with maybe some tweaks or some enhanced strategies you can do better with your money. So number one, getting a mortgage just to get the tax deduction. I've heard and seen people say, well, you know, I've got the money to buy the house or to pay off my mortgage, but if I do that, I lose my deduction. I will be happy to give you my address and a time you can meet me, and I'll be glad to trade you a dollar for every quarter. In other words, you give me a dollar, I'll give you a quarter. That's what you're doing. It's a tax deduction. It's not a tax credit. So you have to spend the dollar in interest to get the tax deduction, which will end up being about 25 cents on the dollar, depending on your tax bracket. So there are times when the mortgage interest will affect whether or not you take the standard deduction or not. But very often, it's more a decision about the rate you're paying on the mortgage than it is the deductibility of the mortgage interest that will determine whether or not it's a good idea to have the mortgage. And if you've got the cash in the bank, you're not making much on it, you have a significantly higher interest rate than what you're paying, you have adequate other cash on hand, yeah, we might want to go ahead and pay off the mortgage. Maybe you don't get to deduct quite as much, but I bet you dollar for dollar at the end of the year and you put all that together, it'll be better for you. Number two, liquidating an IRA all in 1 year to pay off a mortgage. Again, I like the idea of not having debt, but at what cost? The best way to use 401ks, 403bs, tax shelter annuities, IRAs, all of these things is to draw them out over your lifetime in retirement. That keeps you in a lower tax bracket. You know, ironically, that's why those things were all created. They were all created as a substitute or a supplement to the age-old, not as often found today, pension plans. So what do pension plans do? They give you money over your lifetime. You pay tax on it as you get it. Well, that's what these are if you use them properly, and it will keep you in a lower bracket. You know, stay in the 10 or 15% bracket. Don't take it all out 1 year and go into the 33 or 25 or some other really high bracket. You never get a break for that. They don't say, oh, you paid higher taxes before, you can pay less this year. That doesn't happen. Each tax year stands on its own. So that's another thing to be careful about. Of course, withdrawing money before 59 and a half from IRAs and the like, you have to be very careful, because if you don't follow certain exceptions and rules, you have an extra 10% tax on the money you take out. Ouch. Okay. What else? You also need to be careful with Social Security and when you draw it, the other income you have. There's a lot of talk about when to take Social Security, how to optimize Social Security for your specific situation. Great. Love the idea. but it's not a single dimension. It's multifaceted. What are your other sources of income? All those things may determine when you should take Social Security and how much of it will be taxed. For some people, when they draw Social Security, as much as 85% of the Social Security benefits they receive are taxed. And this is money you've already paid tax on, right? It was payroll deducted. You paid your share. Your employer paid their share. Or if you were self-employed, you paid both sides. You've already paid tax on this, and you're going to pay tax on it again, so be careful. Now, there are some things you can do that are smart. We'll call them smart tax moves, and these are just a few to be thinking about. There are a lot of good things that you can think to do. Number one, for your non-qualified regular money, your cash money, brokerage money, consider low-cost, low-turnover mutual funds, if that fits your situation. Why low turnover? Well, if they don't turn over very often, you have less recognition of income, and you also have long-term capital gain tax treatment. For a lot of people, they're like, okay, David, you just made my head hurt. Okay, but the point is that you want to pay attention to the things you invest in with regular money and how it will be taxed. Back to my point at the beginning about knowing how the investment will be taxed before you invest in it. Now, for IRAs and things like that, the taxation inside of it doesn't matter. Mutual funds, annuities, CDs, all those things are taxed the same inside of an IRA. No tax while you have it in the IRA. And when you draw it out, it's always ordinary income. What else can you do? I mentioned before drawing the IRAs out systematically, huge advantage, and also making sure you coordinate all the different sources of income. You've got Social Security, you've got a pension or an IRA, you've got some regular money, you've got some inherited money, you've sold a house. All those things have different tax considerations. They all can be brought together into a coordinated plan. In my mind's eye, I'm thinking of all those things coming together and being used to build a plan that gives you the cash you need. You know, in retirement, or as you approach retirement, it becomes a lot more about cash flow. Where will you get the cash you need to retire? And it's very helpful to step back and think outside the box. What are the sources of income and cash flow that you should create? And you want to map it out, not just on, okay, well, what will I do this month or what will I do this year? But what will I do over the next year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? What is my plan of attack? And if you think that way, it'll help you with your taxes and it will help you with your retirement. If you do those things, you know what I'm going to say? It'll help you plan stronger.
Have you considered an annuity as part of your retirement plan? Did you know that over the past several years, Americans put trillions of dollars into annuities? But despite their popularity, many people aren't sure about annuities. Why? Because annuities have been attacked for decades by financial folks who offer competing products or services. A lot of money is at stake, so some financial firms who only offer investments don't want you to consider an annuity. Get the facts. Find out about this valuable financial resource. Call Holland Financial today and get your free copy of Annuities as Part of Your Retirement Plan at 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
Hello, welcome back. All right, we continue our series on the mistakes that people make with their money. Now, this next one will not make me popular. Unsustainable lifestyle spending. Can't get a grip on finances, can't get a grip on what we spend, don't want to talk about it, don't want to deal with it, all that. All right, so let's just dive in here. Some people hate the word budget. It's a bad word. More carefree people don't want to be limited. I mean, who wants that, right? I mean, I can understand that. I can spend money as well as anybody else. Just because I'm a financial planner doesn't make me a tightwad. A lot of people can relate to that. Some people, though, are just built differently. It's our personality. Some people are more of that saver, budgeter, operate from a place of scarcity and concern about money. Some people aren't. Some people are more focused on what comes in versus what goes out. And so there is and can be very often with couples a built-in conflict about their finances. And it is a source of major stress. It is a source of, in many cases, marital problems and divorce. And so the easiest way to get on the same page, ready? this should come as no surprise, is to get a financial plan. You know, it's interesting. Sometimes two people in the couple relationship, they come at it from a very different place and the communication has gotten broken down. They already think they know what the other person is going to say. And I've been in meetings where I'm talking to both of them and they're both saying the same thing to me, but they're both hearing different things from each other. So I find out I end up being almost like an interpreter, talking to one and talking to the other, and sometimes translating. So when you build a plan, and especially if you have a third party who is neutral, who's trying to help, it becomes pretty obvious. This is what you've got. This is what you're trying to do. This is where you need to be. And this is how much you can take. Now, my personal opinion is it's not really my job to tell you how much you can spend on Starbucks or buying a new fiddle. I mean, that's not my job. But sometimes I will if somebody needs me to. But my job, I see, and a lot of financial planners agree with this approach, is that I'll tell you how much money you can take. Then the two of you, the couple, needs to decide where that money is spent. But the real key point is that the budgeter, the saver, the person who is stressed about the spending can have a level of comfort that is, here's what we know we can spend, we know we're not going to run out, and they can relax. The spender, the more carefree spouse, can say, okay, good, I know what we can spend, we can negotiate and talk about where we'll spend it, and they're happy because guess what? That's what they wanted to do to begin with. So the real key is to get a plan, because if you are spent, here's the challenge and why it's so important. If you spend more than you make or take in or receive an income, it can really set up almost a domino effect. Now, if you're still working, an occasional bout of excessive spending or living beyond your means, or even being realistic in the fact that you can't save a lot during different periods in your life. That's life. That's reality. You know, if you're putting kids through college, or you are trying to save up for a home, or you're buying your first car, or you've got student loans, all those things may very much take precedence over and prevent you from piling a lot of money in your 401k. Okay, we all get that. But when you get closer to retirement, you are in that 5 to 10 years out from retirement. It's crunch time. You need to be putting as much away as you can. And then when you get into retirement, what you've got is what you've got. If then you have retired and you are taking more or spending more than you've got an income, then you've only got two ways to deal with that higher outflow than inflow. One, put it on credit cards or other short-term debt, and you delay having to pay them off, and you just make your minimum payments or whatever it is. Or you pay it off, you have to use some of your retirement assets, and guess what now? You have a permanent reduction in your retirement assets. Does that mean those retirement assets are going to last longer or shorter? Obviously, they're not going to last as long as they would. Now, we could say, well, yeah, but if I have some good returns and I invest well, and you know, that's what my advisor is supposed to do anyway. He or she can make that up. That's their job. Well, maybe so, but you would still have more if you didn't take more out than you should have. So that good return that they would have had would have given you even more. So the point is, it's a permanent reduction and you could potentially imperil your financial future. So be cognizant of these things. Be aware of them. Understand that you have to have a measured plan, and you can live retirement with comfort, joy, confidence, but you have to know that you're not going to run out. And there are ways to do that. And that's what people very often don't realize. That's what financial planning is all about. And that's why financial advisors do what they do. If you'll do these things, if you'll plan ahead, you will plan stronger. You know, before I let you go on this series, let me put a big bow around it. Let's recap. Why do planning? why address these things? You know, it's very easy to kind of just ignore it and say, yeah, I'm going to get to that later. That really is important. I'll plan my future tomorrow. Everybody's done it. Everybody's guilty. I've made mistakes over the years. I look back and go, golly, I could have done that a lot better, or I could have made a better choice. But we are where we are today. Can't change the past. What can we do going forward? And it really boils down to financial independence. That's what this is all about. There are things you can do that will help your situation. And I'll give you a quick rundown to kind of summarize this series about the mistakes that people make with their money. Here are some of the things that you can do. You know, cheap, well-run, good-performing mutual funds. Great step in the right direction. Not giving money that you might need for yourself to your family or friends. That's a good idea. How about addressing long-term care? I'm not saying everybody needs it or should have it. Statistics vary. You may not need it, but at the very least, look at it, understand it, consider it for your individual situation, and see if it makes sense. What else should you do? Well, what about inflation? In recent years, inflation has been tamed. Will it be more of an issue in the future? At some point it will be. Can I tell you when? Nope, can't do that. But we have to plan for the unexpected or the uncertain. That's all part of planning. Do you do things to make sure that you aren't pulling money out of a portfolio that's going up and down and potentially exposing you to liquidating your investments at a time when you're going to get less for them? Absolutely. That's just part of building a plan. Do you make sure you're diversified enough? You know, I know some of these are obvious, but critical for your future. But you want to make sure that your plan is coordinated. It's like an orchestra. There needs to be coordination, or it's not a symphony, it's a cacophony, okay? You need it all to be brought together, and that's why I'm such an advocate for planning and looking for ways to make the best of what you've got, and that will get you where you need to be. And if you do those things, you know what I'm going to say? It'll help you plan stronger.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.